This episode of Blist, the podcast, is brought to you by that feeling of hope that wells up in your chest when you realize that thing you've been worried about is going to be okay.
Well, I always tell my students, follow your bliss.
Welcome, my beautiful babies. Welcome to Blist, the podcast. We are so excited you're here. My name is Patch Drury. I'm your host. I am a Blist consultant, a Blist coach. I help people discover, understand, and pursue their personal bliss. And I do that a lot of different ways. I do it through this podcast, for one thing, where I talk to people who are following their bliss and help kind of decode and understand what they do. And then I actually meet with people one-on-one and help them kind of look at their life and figure out what mission they're being called to. And doing that is my bliss. So I am practicing what I preach today. Today we have a very special guest. Since I was a little child, I have been a fan of comic books. In my early years, you could find me sprawled out on the floor of my room, surrounded by comic books like the plumage of some fossilized great prehistoric bird, surrounded by these comics. I loved comics. I can remember a moment when I was in my early teens and my grandmother said to me, we were riding in a car, and she said to me, one day you won't love comics quite so much. You'll outgrow them. And I was offended at the mere suggestion. And it turns out, I wish you could tell her, she is a little bit right. I don't read comics quite the way I used to. I'm not as enthusiastic about the content as I used to be, but I do still read comics. I have a couple that I love, books like Headlopper by Andrew McLean and Multiple Warheads by Brandon Graham. Those are books that I still really love, but I don't read as much as I used to. So Nanny, if you're up there in heaven listening, I hope you are. I know you're in heaven. I hope you're listening. I hope this is interesting to you. But you were right. I didn't quite maintain my love well into my 40s like I imagined I would. Anyway, because I love comics so much, I knew eventually I wanted to interview someone whose bliss was working in comics, and today we have that. Justin Stewart is a comic illustrator. He's a colorist. He has devoted his life and his effort and his energy and his creativity to creating comic books. And specifically, I want to talk to him this week as we continue to dissect the monomyth and talk about Refusal of the Call, because comics will break your heart. It is a rough business to be in, and so there are lots of moments to refuse the call, and Justin talks to us about that and what that's like and how he deals with it. Let's stop listening to me. Let's get to Justin as soon as possible. Here it is, Justin Stewart.
When Captain America throws his mighty shield, all those who chose to oppose his shield must yield. If he's led to a fight and a duel is due, then the red and the white and the blue will come through when Captain America throws his mighty shield.
Whoever you are, show yourself.
Hi, I'm Justin Stewart, and I'm an artist, illustrator, designer.
Captain America, lost in memories, thoughtfully peruses snapshots in an album, filled with haunting memories.
So, Justin, tell me this. Our last episode, I talked about the call to adventure, that moment where you realize, oh, I've got this thing I'm supposed to be doing, and maybe it's solving a problem, maybe it's creating something. What was your call to adventure when it came to comics and art and illustration?
It was, I had gotten into like band poster design and stuff while I was in college, and I'd been into comics all my life, and so I think it was just a progression of starting there and then doing web comics back in the early days, the early 2000s or whatever, and then collecting those into like a little ash can kind of thing. And then the next step after that is actually sending files to a printer and getting it professionally bound and stapled and cut and
all
that stuff.
Was that a pretty good moment the first time you opened a box and saw what the printer had sent you, and you're like, oh, this is what it's supposed to look like.
Yes.
This is
the
staple and the four-color printing process.
Right. And it's supposed to be this easy.
Yeah. was it easy?
It was. I mean, it was most like anything else. Is you send something, they'll proof it, and then sometimes they'll be like, hey, adjust the bleed here or whatever, gotcha. And you resend it. But that's been it.
But you weren't working with an editor.
Correct.
So there was nobody saying, you could really do better on this.
No, no. They were just like, here's the bill.
And yeah, pay us and we'll print it. Looks weird.
Unconscious and helpless to defend himself, how can the gallant red, white, and blue Avenger escape the fantastic fate that awaits him?
So so a lot of people, they get their call to adventure. Mm-hmm. And the next step, if you're looking at the monomyth, the next step, and this is what I wanted to talk to you about, and I'll explain why you specifically, so people don't think I'm just a dick or something. But after call to adventure is refusal of the call.
Yes.
And so the way that plays out in stories and movies and novels is sometimes a potential hero is told, hey, you have to come fight this bad guy. And the potential hero is like, no, I'm not going to do that.
Right.
And there are two obstacles mythologically, usually, and that's, and they're kind of represented in Buddhism and some other places, but fear and attachment. So either you're attached to your life the way it is and you don't want it to change, or you fear what life is going to be like if you take the challenge. So they're really both kind of ways of, they're kinds of fear.
Mm-hmm.
So fear of change or fear of not having what you had. So, but I think you can expand that out easily to say also fear of maybe not having what it takes or fear of not being able to accomplish what you're going to do.
It's all of those. And it's all at the same time.
Perfect. See, I approached you about this episode because I know comics is like all art.
Because you made comics.
I've done some stuff, just kind of like self-published stuff, and I did have a thing publish an anthology. But it's one of those careers, and I assume like a lot of art careers, but it is fraught with rejection, and I think, and I was thinking about this today. At the point when I was really reading comics heavily, there were probably like the readership had really taken a dive. I'm not sure what it's at now, but at the time I was really reading, there were probably 100,000 to 200,000 regular comic readers. So not a lot.
No,
not a lot at all. And comics is one of those things that if you've read it, if you've read them, if you've grown up with them, you have some aspiration to create them. I don't care who you are. Maybe it's just a little bit. So
I think it's once you find out that you can do that.
Yeah, yeah.
That someone said, no, someone had to write this. Someone had to draw this.
And
someone had to put it all together. So whatever sort of, you know, part shines the brightest for you, whether it's drawing, coloring, lettering, designing, you know, all of that is in comics.
Yeah. And so I think because, like, so professional comics, There's a limited number of available slots.
Yes.
And there are 100,000 to 200,000 people who are positive they could do it.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like a highly competitive field. It seems like a field that's where editors and people who judge it go to conventions, and they've got 200,000 people walking up saying, hey, look at my book, look at what I did.
Sure.
And so they just kind of get used to saying, no, you're not good enough, you're not good enough. Mm-hmm. Because there's a huge swatch of territory between, oh, I could do this, and professional quality.
Yes.
So because of that, it seems to me to be one of those things that, like I said, is full of potential rejection. Talk to me about that. What were the fears that you had when you were like, oh, okay, it's not band posters, it's comics. I want to do comics. What happens in your head then?
I can't do it. There's that initial rush of, yes, I will do this. And then you start to break down what it actually takes.
Yeah.
And then it was, I can't do this. But that fear isn't, it's a hollow fear.
Yeah.
Right? There's nothing... It's you can get past it because the call will still be there.
Okay.
And the fear is always going to be there.
Right.
So it's just, they both exist with each other.
Okay.
And you just got to go through it.
I'm in an impossible fantasy world. It's true, I'm going mad.
But because you played in the big league, now yours is a name on people's imaginary roster. And so, like you're saying, the fear is different because the fear is now you got to show up again.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So, So we're going to get a little bit ahead on the monomyth into what we're going to talk about next week. The way a person usually gets over the refusal of the call is they are pushed over it, usually by a mentor or supernatural aid of some kind. Mm-hmm. Who are the people? Who are the people that are patting you on the back, that are dragging you behind them, saying, come on, let's do it? Is there someone? Are there names?
Well, I mean, I'll say that a guy named Jim Lujan, he's a cartoonist, animator, writer.
Okay.
He is the guy, aside from being one of the biggest sweethearts on the planet, but his cartoons are super weird. Okay. At times.
What are his cartoons? I'm embarrassed to say I don't know the name.
Well, he's most recently worked with Bill Plimpton.
Oh.
On a movie called Revengeance.
I've heard of him. Yes. I've heard of Bill Clinton.
So, and he's been doing independent cartoons for years.
Okay.
That's where, you know, I met him back in the early days of the message boards.
Okay.
So he's the guy
that... A big, for comics, the late 90s, early 2000s, right. Comic book message board culture was alive and well.
Yes. And it formed a lot of the relationships between creators that are firing on all cylinders right now.
So I used to visit a board, the Warren Ellis Forum, back mm-hmm. in the day, mm-hmm. and a lot of those guys yep. are the guys who are the big names now. Mm-hmm. But my wife, to this day, like I have this thing, I love to fight on the internet with people, and she doesn't get it at all. But it's because I came up in the late 90s, sure. early 2000s on sure. comic book message boards, and that is all you fought. Like, you mm-hmm. didn't have nice conversations. Like, you might have had one or two guys that you were friendly with, but in general, you were like, oh, you think Cyclops's beams create heat? Well, you're a fucking idiot. You know, like, they are concussive in nature. They don't right. create heat.
Right.
And so, right. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Tell me more about this guy. I'm sorry.
No. But it works. What I was going to say is, he's one of the people on, it was the Fanboy Radio message boards.
Okay.
And it was one of the early, maybe earliest comic book centric podcasts.
Okay.
And there were a lot of really nice people
yeah.
on that board.
Yeah. Strangely.
Yeah, right. There wasn't a lot of back and forths and fighting and, you know, that's stupid, you're dumb.
Yeah.
You're not a real nerd, get out of here, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was a really sort of uplifting environment. And and Jim Lujan being the main guy that was like, hey, I know this guy named Jim Mahfood, and he's looking for someone to color some of his work.
Okay.
And I had been playing with digital coloring and posting them on the Fanboy Radio message boards.
Okay.
And people were like, hey, that's all right.
Yeah. You know?
And I was just sort of just learning the ropes of Photoshop and stuff like that. This sure. was 2003, 2004. And Jim Lujan put me in touch with him. And then ever since 2005, I've had a working relationship with Jim Mahfood.
And so Jim Mahfood, kind of a... graffiti culture is kind of where he you might say he got a start. I'm talking out of my ass now, so I may but I make assumptions that
he did like house parties and stuff in Arizona where he there's a DJ named DJ Z Trip.
Okay.
I don't know if you know him, but he's a like he was one of the first like mashup dudes.
Gotcha.
You know, they hit big, and so Jim knows him, like they partied together in Arizona.
Yeah.
And then Jim moved from Arizona to LA, and that's where he started looking at street art and then like being involved with underground hip hop artists and stuff like that and doing album covers and doing, you know, he was working in animation at the same time. So he was sort of absorbing all these different styles.
And so his comics, in a lot of ways, they're about street art. They're about house parties. They're about hip hop. They're probably not the kind of comics that would, if you, as an outsider, when you think about comics, they're not what you would picture. And that's kind of what's great and amazing about them is that they are some of the material that's pushing the medium, mm-hmm. pushing the medium to mm-hmm. say, this doesn't have to be two guys in capes punching each other.
Right.
You know, it can be something
and
else.
He was one of the first dudes that I really latched onto after I saw his work.
Yeah.
So I was already a fan of the guy.
Okay.
When Jim Lujan introduced me.
You were like, oh, Jim, yeah, I know him.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, I know who the fuck that is.
Yeah. And so you guys have had a working relationship. You guys just had a book come out. And when you say a book has come out in comics, what that generally means is there's how many ever monthly issues? I think it was four in this case.
It was six.
Six. So there's six monthly issues. So for 6 months, once a month, a comic comes out. So the comic you would, a person would picture when you say comic, like a floppy pamphlet style.
Yeah.
And then usually at the pretty soon after that 6 months, and this was really quick, it seemed like they come out with a trade paperback where they're all collected into a bound edition.
Right.
And so Ural's trade paperback just came out. Name of the book is Girl Scouts.
Girl Scouts Magic Socks.
Spelled, like if you just spelled Girl Scouts, you wouldn't find
it. No, G-R-R-L.
Two R's.
Yes.
Okay. And it's called Magic Socks. And so there are other Girl Scout volumes. This is the newest one.
Right.
Give me the elevator pitch. What's it about?
The elevator pitch is these three drug dealing friends.
Girls.
Girls. All super hot girls that sell weed. And also assassinate people.
Yeah, well, I can't imagine doing one without the other.
Sure. I mean, you know, you have to branch out. And so they have the premise is one of them has a pair of magic socks and it alters reality, and it's just a crazy psychedelic.
And so the magic socks are new to this volume.
Yes,
they have
the first appearance of the magic socks.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Awesome. So, and if people want to purchase that.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, say you live in Lexington, you're listening to this because you are one of my devoted fans.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, well, if Patch says it's worthwhile, it must be worthwhile. Where would be the easiest place to get this?
The easiest place would be to go to Collectibles, Etc. in Lexington, Kentucky.
Because you know it's there.
Yes. And gotcha. They have the trade in stock. And if they don't, they can order it for you.
Awesome.
Hank, as a biochemist, what do you make of him?
Can't answer that, Steve. Not without a careful examination.
you're called to adventure. You're called to comics.
Yes.
It's one of those calls that it's easy to refuse because it's a hard one.
Yes.
You have people that pull you over the threshold, though, and you jump into it. Once you jump into it, what are the kind of things that are said to you that will make you stay in it forever? Like, when is it the most gratifying thing? When does it feel like your bliss? Obviously, it feels like your bliss when you're doing it, but...
Well, yes and no.
Okay.
Because it feels like your bliss while you're doing it, but if something isn't working, if something isn't going right, and you're having to force yourself through a drawing, or, you know, whatever it is you're working on...
Is that more often than not, or is that rare?
No, no. It doesn't happen often. But when it does, it makes it difficult to consider it a bliss.
Gotcha.
Because then it becomes a battle.
Yeah.
And you are telling the page, you're telling the illustration, I will conquer you.
that
I have to conquer you. And sometimes it breaks you.
Yeah.
And you just have to be like, you know what? You push away from the desk and you call it a night.
I don't think that disqualifies it as a bliss.
Okay.
Personally, I had
there's a passion involved.
Exactly. There's passion involved. Yeah. One of the things I do, professionally is I consult with people about bliss and about creativity. Mm-hmm. And so I had a meeting with a client today where he came to me and he was like, he's a photographer and he's like, I'm taking the same shot over and over again and I don't know why. And it's killing me. And I need to like get out of this rut of taking the same picture and over and over. Mm-hmm. And what I kind of said to him, which I think is applicable a lot of places, is a lot of times when you're making the same mistake over and over again, it's because there's something inside you that wants you to pay attention to that thing you're doing because it's trying to tell you something.
Sure.
And so I think no matter whether it's photography or comics or whatever it is, those moments of agony and pain and battle, they're opportunities to learn about yourself. And I think that's kind of what makes it your bliss too.
Yeah.
Is that you are constantly having to dive inward and you're bringing something back to say, okay, here's the finished piece. Here's what I learned about myself. And hopefully the world is like, oh, we've been looking for this.
Hopefully, yes.
Give us the magic socks. Give us the message.
Right.
But sometimes, no.
Right. And there's a thing where when you're fighting with whatever it is you're doing and you walk away, but then you still can't keep like going over in your head.
Yeah, you kind of let your...
If I fix this line, if I tweak this thing, if I do this, then I can, or if I flip this, then I can see how that might work better. So getting frustrated is ultimately, right, it sort of pulls out of you like this reconciliation.
Yeah. And
with the drawing.
I think I've been thinking about this a lot lately. I think ultimately, hopefully, you task your subconscious with solving these problems. Mm-hmm. And hopefully you believe in your subconscious enough. You don't block it up to like let it do its work.
Right.
If you say, I trust that if I walk away from this, I let my brain kind of lean against it a little bit inactively, mm-hmm. the answer is going to come. In your experience, does that usually work?
Yeah, most oftentimes.
Okay, good.
You know, and it's a thing where it's also your brain learning that it is still a process, that like not everything that you envision is going to come out that one, you know, session that you have.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the table or at the, you know, whatever.
Surrender, and I shall fight you no more.
Surrender? What happens if I do surrender?
Do you get recognized?
No.
No.
When you go to a comic book convention or any sort of pop culture convention, you're like, yeah, he's the fat, bearded, bald dude.
And people are like, oh, really?
Oh,
okay.
Thanks.
Oh, Brian.
Awesome.
Brian Pochen? Is that who that is?
I bet he has a backpack on, too.
Oh,
thanks,
that guy.
Awesome.
So, do you, I know, like, with the Jim Mahfood stuff, you did colors. Do you consider mm-hmm. yourself a colorist?
Yeah, or absolutely.
Or do you consider yourself, is it larger than that?
No, I mean, for that, it was a colorist.
Okay.
Or color artist, or however you want to do it.
What is your preference?
I like...
Because there's going to be a lot of show notes for this.
Okay,
I want to make sure I get them.
I like color artist. I think that's... Nice.
Color artist. Yeah. I hope if I don't remember that, don't get mad at me.
No,
if
no
it says colorist, then be like, idiot. He asked. Why did he ask?
No. But I like that because I do add like special effects and I enhance, or I like to think that I enhance the drawing or just
sure.
the overall vibe of the page.
Gotcha.
You know, so I think that adds a bit, you know, I am putting theory into practice.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
I am, you know, so it's a, yeah. I think it's a bit, I don't know, man. I want it to be like all bougie and like, I'm a color artist.
I think it's okay.
Yeah.
Your art board is behind you. You mm-hmm. are also a penciler and inker.
Right. Here's the thing. I've learned to do everything pretty okay.
Right. Do you feel
coloring,
like coloring,
I'm a bit better
you're really
than anything
good
else.
At, yeah.
Yes. I'm the best at coloring because that's what I do the most.
Gotcha.
So I am this year currently trying to draw the most.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. So, do you, how often do you meet kids that are like want to do comics?
There's usually one every show. You know, I do about four comic book conventions a year,
okay.
to five. And there's always someone that comes to the show and is like, I want to do this.
What's your best advice to the kid that wants to do this? Just do it?
I mean, yeah.
Like, obviously, you can't just do it professionally. Well, not to say you can approach it professionally,
right.
but you can't necessarily get somebody to pay you for it, but that doesn't mean you can't do it.
Right, yeah. The first step is to just do the thing that you want to do. You figure out what you need to do it, and in this case, it's a piece of paper and a pencil.
Which is really...
Or a piece of charcoal, or...
of all the visual arts, it is really the most democratic in a way,
sure.
because... If you like steal some copy or paper from work,
mm-hmm.
steal a pencil from work, and you can make a comic, and
right, that's a $0 investment.
Exactly, and
so you're starting in the black.
I think it's Brandon Graham's one. He talks about like you can draw comics in a dumpster.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
you can be at your lowest point in life, and if mm-hmm. you can steal some paper and pencil, and I recommend steal it. If you like, if there's a place that you can steal paper and pencil, and you need to get the comics out of you,
mm-hmm.
steal it. Steal mm-hmm. art supplies, whatever your thing is, steal them. I'm totally in favor of that. But you, it's one of those things that it's very, like I said, very democratic. So
it is.
So your advice to kids is. Just do it. Just
mm-hmm.
and
what it, what is what do you, what story do you want? What's your story about?
Right.
What do you want to say?
Okay.
And then just draw that.
Which is all art, right? Like, what is
yes.
the thing inside of you
yeah.
that is trying to get out that you want to bring to the world?
Yeah.
You may not have an answer for this one. This will mark you as either a narcissist or a not or
okay.
not a narcissist.
Okay. A narcissist.
I can answer this question.
Mm-hmm.
About myself in great detail, so that should tell you what I am.
Okay.
what is the message of your art? is there an overriding message? What is the thing saying over and over again?
There's not one.
I bet there is.
Well, it's not something that I've ever put any time into thinking.
You're not
about.
Doing it on purpose. Some kind of input and direction to. If you looked hard enough at it, you'd be like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm saying that over and over again. And here's why I think that. Because
big swaths of black ink is what's up.
I worked
spatter, spatter, splatter.
You know this about me. Anybody who listens to me knows this about me because I won't shut up about it. But I worked at a church for years and I did video production. Yeah. And clearly when you do work at a church, they want you, like, you're there to talk about Jesus.
Right.
Like, that's supposed to be
you
the
have
point
a specific
of
message.
Yeah, exactly. Today. Like, and if you're not telling that story, you're gonna get fired. Mm-hmm. So clearly that's the story I'm being asked to tell over and over again, but I can take my work even from that period in my life up till a certain point that I finally made peace with it and look at it and be like, man, this, I am, regardless of what they thought it was about, here's what it was really about. And I can explain to you why it was about that and point it out. And so it is my belief that your inner self is very prolific and very pointed and very expressive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my challenge to you. I don't care if you do it or not, but my challenge to you and to every artist out there is lay all your work out and say, what is the thing that you're saying over and over again to yourself and to the world, mostly to yourself?
if I break it down into the sequential stories that I've done, top to bottom, it always ends up with just one person left.
Okay. So maybe that's probably where you start, is like, okay, why is there just, why does everybody else die?
Right. Or leave.
Why is everyone leaving me?
Right.
Okay, so I think we're there.
Okay.
I think we're starting to hit on it.
Okay.
But anyway, so this is part of figuring out your bliss and finding your bliss and living into your bliss, is what are the messages that exist inside of a person? Mm-hmm. And what are the things that, given a blank piece of paper that they've stolen from work and a pencil,
mm-hmm.
what is the story they're going to tell by default?
Right.
And so I get very grandiose about these things, but that is my want to do. So
yeah, sure.
So we are here. We are given this nugget, this kernel of something inside of us.
But it doesn't it doesn't pop all at once.
No. It's a slow burn.
It's a gradual. Achievement,
yeah,
you know,
and
it's that thing of like, well, there's no, like, I always explain it this way, like, if you make a piece of art or whatever and you push away from the table and you go, that's the best thing ever, then quit.
Because what's the point after
because
that?
What's the point after that?
Exactly.
But the trip up is that's never gonna happen.
No, exactly right. That's exactly right.
So it's a slow, gradual bliss building.
What can happen, though, I think, and I say this because I feel like it happened for me, is the stuff my work was about in that 10-year period,
mm-hmm.
my work's not about anymore. Because
the
thing that I was talking about that whole time, I had a therapist kind of point out to me, hey, here's what's going on with you.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as he kind of pulled the cover back and laid it all bare, I was like, oh, okay, well, I don't have to be stressed about that anymore. Now I can think about something else. And so now my work, I feel, is about, well, it's still in a way about the same thing, but it's largely about following your bliss.
Slowly, a gloved hand rises from the murky waters, desperately struggling, clutching.
I think the following of the of bliss is more like a, it's more like a, you have it in a, on a tap, and sometimes you can get more of it, and sometimes
not. Yeah, absolutely.
But you do know what it tastes like.
You know
how it's supposed to feel.
It's down to how much the muse, and I don't believe the muse is an external thing, I believe it's an internal thing, how much you have opened the door to it.
Right.
This client I was talking to today, I asked him, I said, do you have a space that you go to practice your art? Do you have a sacred space? And he's like, no, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay, well, you need one. You need to have a place that is just yours, that you disappear into and you don't think about anything else but your art.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, where can you do that? And he's like, well, my room is kind of messy. And I was like, okay, that's the first thing. Clean your room.
Yes.
Clean your fucking room.
Right.
Because you are asking this muse to come enter in, and yet your room...
She must have a clean doorway.
Exactly. Your room says to her, I don't care. Exactly. Clean the threshold. That is a phrase that I read yesterday. Mm-hmm. Dust the threshold. Art. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's right. He's like, yeah, he's like, clean the threshold so the muse can walk in.
Right.
That's nice. I like when somebody's read the same books. but I told him, I was like, you got to clean your room. Mm-hmm. And so we're meeting next week, and he walked out with homework assignments, and the first one was clean your room.
Yeah.
And so I like that your studio space here, nobody can see this, but it is very organized and clean. There's a lot going on.
There is.
But I have no doubt that you know, if you need something, you know where to reach.
Right. And my room is set up in a sense where it's, you take it in sections.
Sure.
So it's almost like a comic book where you go sequential. A page at a time.
Okay.
You go a section at a time. And there's different stuff in each section, but they all relate to each other.
See, now you have set up your room that way, and yet you think there may not be an inner message to your work. There's an inner message to your interior decorating. There has to be an inner message to your work. You're working at a level you're not giving yourself credit for. Thank you so much for being willing to talk about a part of the monomyth that is associated with fear and rejection.
Right, and I told you this before we started recording.
Okay.
But I said the way I approach it is that me and the refusal have quarterly meetings.
So you never quite, that's an important thing to point out, you never quite get over it.
No.
That you progress through the monomyth, I believe, but somehow you remain in the step you were just in pretty constantly.
It is still a circle.
Yeah.
Right?
but you almost look over your shoulder and say to the other steps, hey, come on, guys, we're going this way. So.
Sure, yeah. You bring along, you know, all the other ones.
So
you're still hitting up against...
There's no arrival. You're
not
always...
Really.
You're
I mean,
always...
the opposition is always like, hey, I'm still here if you just want to not do this anymore.
Gotcha. So, well, I'm glad you haven't been taken down by it. I'm glad you're still doing it.
Sure.
Where can people... You've already told us where they can buy Girl Scouts, but... Mm-hmm. Where can you be found online?
Online? My website is justin3000.com. So that's JUSTIN3000.com. And that's got my Instagram and Twitter and, links to all of my logo work, design work, illustration work.
Gotcha. And you're you're available for commissions?
Correct.
And available for design work, I would assume?
Yes, absolutely. I post regularly on Instagram and Twitter. So if there's anyone looking for anything,
you're available.
Yeah, just find me and see if what I do will work for you.
Awesome. Thank you, brother. Really appreciate it.
Amen. You're welcome, dude.
Thanks.
He is gone, disintegrated into nothingness.
That was our interview with Justin Stewart. I hope it was meaningful to you. Justin is an incredible artist, and he's really got his head in this stuff, and he thinks a lot about art and just what art means to the artist. Check out his book with Jim Mahfood, Girl Scouts Magic Socks. You can find it at Collectibles, etc., or on Amazon or any of the other comic book stores here in town. Keep your ear open for this podcast. We'll be coming out every week talking to people who are following their bliss. Right now, this was number 2 in a 6-week series about dissecting the monomyth and explaining how it can help you find your bliss. Also, as I pointed out, I am a consultant. I am a coach that helps people figure out and follow their bliss. So if that's something that you feel like would be helpful to you, please contact me. My email is patchdrury@gmail.com, or you can track me down on social media, and we'll see what we can figure out together. So anyway, this has been Bliss the Podcast. Thank you. See you guys next week.